हरिः
ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Bottom of 15. Thinking to save the state from irregularity, the sages began to consider that it was due to a political crisis that they made Vaina king, although he was not qualified. But alas, now the people were being disturbed by the king himself. Under such circumstances, how could the people be happy? 5-9. Srila Prabhupada explains the function of good government in his purport to verse 9. In Bhagavad Gita 18.5, it is stated that even in the renounced order, one should not give up sacrifice, charity, and penance. The brahmacharis must perform sacrifices, the grihasthas must give in charity, and those in the renounced order of life, the vanaprasthas and sannyasis, must practice penance and austerities. These are the procedures by which everything can be elevated to the spiritual platform. When the sages and saintly persons saw that King Vaina had stopped all these functions, they became concerned about the people's progress. Saintly people preach God consciousness, the Krishna consciousness, because they are anxious to save the general populace from the dangers of animalistic life. There must be a good government to see that the citizens are actually executing their religious rituals, and thieves and rogues must be curbed. When this is done, the people can advance peacefully in spiritual consciousness and make their lives successful. And so it's the government's business to create this peaceful environment, and of course that's then directed by the sages. You know, they give the instruction, they give the training and all that, but the actual effecting it is done with the, you know, with the intelligence, the planning, the endeavors of the administration. Right? So here is that this sacrifice, charity, and penance can never be given up, that everybody's performing. Right? So everybody's performing all three, but we'll see that there'll be an emphasis depending on where you're situated, on what you're doing. So for the brahmachari, they're sacrificed because they're always working for the benefit of someone else. Right? The grihastha is giving in charity because they're the ones that generate all the funds. And then they distribute it. Right? And then the vanaprastha and sannyasi, then it's on austerity and penance. So sticking very strictly to their duties and the difficulties that come from their duties, because generally their duties means life is very simple. You understand? But everybody's doing these things. Brahmachari is performing his duties. You know, what little he has, he shares with others like this. The grihastha is also performing their duties because of that, you know, the austerities, this penance, and they're performing sacrifice. And the vanaprastha sannyasis, they're also performing sacrifice, you know, working for the benefit of others, and giving in charity, sharing whatever they have in the way of spiritual knowledge or whatever other facilities. Right? Does that make sense? So everybody's doing all three, but there'll be this focus like this. Right? Does that make sense? So if that's done, then people advance spiritually. If it's not done, then there's a problem. People won't develop, they'll just remain as animals. So it's very important that this goes on. The sages began to think within themselves, because he was born from the womb of Sunita, King Vaina is by nature very mischievous. Supporting this mischievous king is exactly like maintaining a snake with milk. Now he's become a source of all difficulties. We appointed this Vaina king of the state in order to give protection to the citizens, but now he has become the enemy of the citizens. Right, so, as like we discussed yesterday, is that he wasn't ideal, but it was considered that he would at least keep the environment peaceful. Maybe there wasn't going to be so progressive or anything else, but at least he would create a peaceful environment in which everybody could act. He may not be setting a great example. He may not be making things develop so much. Well, he may just be himself into his own facility and enjoyment, but if he controls the thieves and rascals, then those people can live in a peaceful environment, because the sages and the Brahmas can always be supporting the performance of sacrifice, charity, and austerity, right, if the king is not seeing to it. Does that make sense? But the getting rid of, because that's within training and knowledge, right? Discipline in that area, that's up to the king. But taking care of the rogues and rascals and the thieves, that's the business of the administration. They're supposed to take care of that. Right? But he's overstepped his bounds, so now he's become the enemy of the people. So he's a worse enemy than the rogues and rascals. Not that it's the rogues and rascals are good. No, you have to get rid of both of them. Despite all these discrepancies, we should at once try to pacify him. By doing so, we may not be touched by sinful results caused by him. Right? Because if things are going on, and those who are in a position of authority don't do something about it, the sin of it, they are contaminated by. You understand? That's just how it goes. Someone's in authority. Oh, but they're doing that. No, but if they're under your jurisdiction and they're doing something that's not right, you get the results. We always have to remember that whoever's the administrator, they always get the results of what's within their administration.
That's why they don't last long.
So, because if it's not about the people being pious, and if that's there, then there's nothing. And then the king, because he's protecting, gets the six of their spiritual. But nowadays, because there's no spiritual, he gets the six of their impious, the sinful. And that's only if he's protecting them. Right? If he's not protecting them, he gets 100%. Like that. So that degree he's protecting or not protecting, he gets more or less of their reactions. And since he's not protecting, there's a good chance there's not a whole lot of spiritual going on. Right? So that's how it works. It's just, one may appreciate it, may not, may like it or not, may agree with it or not, but it's just facts. Like, you know, it's like we're saying here that fire produces heat and light. You know, water is wet, sugar is sweet. Right? No, but, you know, that's old, that's archaic. You know, why do we have to go with these old definitions? You know, this is the new time age. We can move on, we can go forward, we can be progressive, we can improve. You know what I'm saying? So it's that kind of mentality is useless. And the point is whether you know fire is heat and light or not, it doesn't matter. Sure. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is the sages understanding this, they're saying that they're the one that put the king in. And if the king's misbehaving, and there's the sages to see that the king is going nicely. Because it's one thing if they're out in the forest, they're not involved, so it's not their business. Right? But if they're making it their business, that they're involved in some way with the administration, giving direction and all that, and things are going wrong, then they're liable to reaction. In the same way that the administration is liable to the reaction of the citizens. Does that make sense? So the reaction of the citizens goes to the king. The reaction of the king goes to the sages. Right? So it's, you know, nobody gets off lightly here. Yes?
I have a question from yesterday, the same topic about what to do in case of the same person of sages. They
want
decision.
The same persons have no decision.
Or advice. Well, here?
Yeah. Yeah, no, but the who is asking the question? Okay. So what's your influence on the senior personalities, either on the, you know, more kind of spiritual or side or on the administrative side? Nothing. Okay. So then your business is chant Hare Krishna and be happy. You understand? Because there's nothing you can do. Does that make sense? So only areas where you have influence, then there's a question of doing. So we're saying here, the sages, they have influence on the king. The king has influence on the citizens. Therefore, these things. But if you're a citizen, what can you do? You just be as Krishna conscious as you can be in the situations and go back to Godhead where you don't have to worry about bad management. Right? Spiritual world, no bad management. Yes.
Ministers opposed to King's enemy, the king.
Right? Yes.
So but they still got implicated in the reactions after he was?
Are they still ministers? Maybe if they decided, okay, enough of this, king went to the forest, I'm going to the forest, then no problem. But if they remain, then they're part of it. You can say, well, everybody wanted it. Yes, but it's your choice to be involved in it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole difficulty. That's what Bhishma is pointing out, that Dharma is very complicated. Because you can say as well, I didn't want it, but then it's there because I'm in administration, because I could pull out of it and it would be great for preaching, but then it may be a difficulty for administration in the area of my influence. Right? Because then you'd have other managers and things like that doing things and it's going to create trouble, so therefore I'm in. But you still are implicated in it. Maybe not as much because you oppose, but still, you're still part of the system. And that's the thing. You know what I'm saying? Because the Dharma is meant that everybody is connected. That's the whole point of the whole Varnashram system, is everybody's connected. Everybody's part of one entity, which is, you know, that entity of servants serving the Lord in their according to their capacity. Does that make sense? So you're supposed to develop that, so that rapport with the Lord, with the devotees, that's then what's going on. And that's what we're trying to do. So one could say it's not fair, but how is it fair that we're in the material world? Right? So we're already starting off on, you know. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the prisoner claiming that, you know, this is, you know, his situation is unjust. You know, why did I get the cell on this side? I wanted the cell on that side. You know, you get some sun through the window. I've been here longer than these other guys. Let the new guys have this cell on this side. I want the saw. This is not just. Why are you there in the first place? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that the implication is there. If you have an ability to have an influence or involved, then you have to do something. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so that's how it'll work. But it has its method how it affects. Just like, let's say, the bureaucrat, he's just doing his job, so he doesn't influence the government, he just works within it. But he'll be influenced because, it's not directly from it, it's because of the position of the leader. And when the leader becomes affected, that affects all those under him.
Can you say that he will be affected by the payment?
He'll be affected by the payment, he gets money, yes, it'll come through there, but what we're saying is that the reaction from the leader goes to him, not from, it doesn't come directly to him. Just like the people doesn't go to the Brahmins, the people goes to the king, the king's goes to the Brahmins. You know, and of the people, the wife's goes to the husband, the children go to the parents. You understand? So basically the kids are at the best, right? Basically, they don't get any. The rule is until they're 13 or 16, right? Because 16 means they're adult, right? But 13 is also there because at 13, they start to think in the way of sense gratification, their own desires. Therefore, the advantage of the child having that innocent attitude means that it gives them longer to be able to develop before the sinful reactions affect them directly. Of course, the modern society is, you know, start young, right? You know, what is it? Start young, die young, have a good-looking corpse, you know, that kind of thing, you know, like that. You know. So these kind of things, oh, why can't they be together, you know, the co-ed and everything like that, but that means you just move the reactions of them getting the sinful from 16 down to 13, that's all you do. Yeah, the boys and girls are just worried about their duties, it goes to 16. They're worried about boys and girls, then it goes to 13. It's just the way it is. It's not, you understand? These are just facts, that's all. Now, how to apply, how we utilize those. Those are points of discussion. There's absolutely no benefit in discussing whether these facts actually are true or not, or have an effect, or whether God's actually in control of everything, or whether my desire is more strong than anything else. Or, you know what I'm saying? Yes.
When they're young, they don't get the reaction from their sinful things. For good ones?
For good ones? Yeah, generally they'll get that. Yeah, that'll stay. Just like for the wife, she does good work, she gets that. She does something not good, the husband gets that. Yeah, so it works out.
In other words, Sunita, she was cursed when she was very young. So the curse also goes, even though they're kids.
It gives its benefit later. Means if you porn, it's just like this. Let's say you do something that's a small thing. Then the reaction's over now, that's going to the parents. Let's say it's something long-term, the reaction will last for 10, 20 years. So your parents will get it till you're 16, then when you're 16, you'll get it. Right? You know. In other words, it's your karma. It's just a matter of who's getting it until you're mature enough to be able to deal with it. So then, does that make sense? So the point is being adult and being qualified to interact between men and women, those two go together. Like that. So that's why then it's at 16, or if you're already involved in that at 13, it happens then. Does that make sense. These are the procedures by which everyone can be elevated to the spiritual platform. Okay, there we go. Okay, the sages began to think within themselves. Because he was born from the womb of Sunita, King Vaina is by nature very mischievous. Okay, we did that. Of course, we were completely aware of his mischievous nature, yet nevertheless we enthroned Vaina. If we cannot persuade King Vaina to accept our advice, he will be condemned by the public, and we will join them. Thus, by our prowess, we shall burn him to ashes. 10 to 12. In Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 12, we find that in Kali Yuga, rather than resorting to politics, saintly persons should invoke the power of the holy name. Saintly persons are not interested in political matters, yet they are always thinking the welfare of the people in general. So that's the whole thing. They're not interested in the political or being involved. They just want things to go smoothly for the populace. Because if they go smoothly, then they can be Krishna conscious. Right? Because if there's a state of distress, there's a tendency to not be so God conscious. I mean, the one is if it's minor, but if there's great poverty, great disturbances, then the people get so distracted because their regular duties are not going on, so their life doesn't go in its natural way. They don't perform their regular duties of penance, austerity, and charity. So that's the interest, not that they want to get involved, it's just that's the interest. Consequently, they sometimes have to come down to the political field and make steps to correct the misguided government or royalty. However, in Kali Yuga, saintly persons are not as powerful as they previously were. They used to be able to burn any sinful man to ashes by virtue of their spiritual prowess. Now saintly persons have no such power due to the influence of Kali Yuga, the age of Kali. Indeed, the brahmanas do not even have the power to perform sacrifices in which animals are put into the fire to maintain a new life. Under these circumstances, instead of actively taking part in politics, saintly persons should engage in chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna. By the grace of Lord Chaitanya, by simply chanting this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the general populace can derive all benefits without political implications. So, since the point is that the people in general get benefit, therefore the saintly persons just stick to chanting Hare Krishna and spreading the glories of the holy name, the populace will get the benefit anyway, without the political intervention. You understand? there'd be the natural way of doing things. But if not, then this way you just circumvent the system and just deal directly with the spiritual. Does that make sense? So, despite whether the governance is good or not, people can be God conscious. But the natural thing is, if the government is good, then the populace, the environment is peaceful, the people will tend to be more God conscious or easily encouraged to be God conscious. Right? But if that's not there, then simply by encouraging God consciousness directly, then they can get the benefit despite the environment not being very favorable. So. Verses 13 to 22. The sages advise King Vena. The great sages, having thus decided, approached King Vena. Concealing their real anger, they pacified him with sweet words and then spoke as follows. The great sages said, "Dear King, we have come to give you good advice. Kindly hear us with great attention. By doing so, your duration of life and your opulence, strength, and reputation will increase." Right? So for a materialist, even for nothing else, they'd do it just for this purpose. Srila Prabhupada's purport explains Vedic protocol. According to Vedic civilization, in a monarchy, the king is advised by saintly persons and sages. By taking their advice, he can become the greatest executive power, and everyone in his kingdom will be happy, peaceful, and prosperous. The great kings were very responsible in taking the instructions given by great saintly personalities. The kings used to accept the instructions given by great sages like Parasara, Vyasa, Narada, Deval, and Asita. In other words, they would first accept the authority of saintly persons and then execute their monarchical power. Unfortunately, in the present age of Kali, the head of government does not follow the instructions given by the saintly persons. Therefore, neither the citizens nor the men of government are very happy. Their duration of life is shortened, and almost everyone is wretched and bereft of bodily strength and spiritual power. If citizens want to be happy and prosperous in this democratic age, they should not elect rascals and fools who have no respect for saintly persons. It's funny, the only difference is one letter. Democratic, democratic. Right? You understand? So the problem is the lack of God consciousness. It's not about what system of government you're using. Any system can work if people are properly God conscious and following, you know, the laws of God to try to protect the populace, right? Which means the people are happy, they're prosperous, they're comfortable. It's not that you're managing based on fear. That won't generate prosperity. Right? It'll generate authority, but it won't generate happiness and prosperity. Right? So that's the whole thing. So it has to be this combination. That one is proper administration that's protecting the people and God consciousness. That combination will make it all work nicely. Those who live according to religious principles, dharma, and who follow them by words, mind, body, and intelligence are elevated to the heavenly kingdom, which is devoid of all miseries. Being thus rid, because he's saying body, mind, and words, right? Because you want all three to be in heaven, right? Isn't it? Because you get reactions for something performed on any one of these three levels. Right? We just take it that it's sinful. But the point is it's sinful on the physical, it's on the mental, or on the platform of the intelligence. Right? So that's how it has to be defined. So if you're religious on all three of those, then the situation on the heavenly platform will be all three. Then you're elevated to the heavenly kingdom. Right? Otherwise, let's say just physically they're pious, but the other two are not, then you may have a very good physical situation here, but you'll be getting the reactions that are not nice. Someone's born in a very good family, wealthy, all nice facilities, but the relationships in the family are just terrible. So, it's good facility, that you can say is heavenly, but the environment is not. You understand? Or they're pious on the, that platform, right? With mind, they're very that. Their words are very nice and all that. So they may have a physically not a nice situation, but everybody around them is very nice and they have a very good rapport. Yeah, you understand? Or the other two aren't good, but they speak well, they deal properly, like that. So then people will deal with them properly, though their own mind and situations are crazy. Does this make sense? So if all three are together, then one can be elevated properly to the heavenly kingdom. You know, or to that degree. Like you see, the question the other day is antariksha. They're doing something pious, otherwise why are they a more elevated living entity with greater powers? But at the same time, is the mentalities sometimes have some shortcomings. So that means that there's some weakness somewhere here. Right? Does that make sense? They've done some austerity, penance, charity that's elevated them, but there's something also that's weak. So,
who said that the level of devotion will determine where the person will go? If they finish the empires, they will go to the demigods. Powers and some folk in there, they will go to the direction. And if they're devoted, then they will go to the spiritual world.
Yeah, in general, you'd say like that. That would be the general. Because that's the point, is the karmis want to go to the heavenly planet, so depending upon the degree of their piety, they get a more heavenly or a less heavenly situation. Right? And that's also if it's more, if there's an element of God consciousness, they go to the heavenly planets. If they're not God conscious, they'll go to the lower heavenly planets. Right? If they're on the platform of Brahman realization, they're absorbed like that, then they'll go to some situation either directly to the Brahman or to the Satyaloka, and then you know at either they will remain, I say, alive during the whole life of Brahma, or they'll merge into Brahman after Brahma's leading the universe, then they'll merge into the Lord. So in some way, depending also on their level there. And then the devotee, then their goal being to go back to Godhead, they'll always go back to Godhead, but it's just a matter of how committed they were, right? So if they're devotees, but they're distracted, then they might go to the heavenly planets and come back, be born in you know, well-to-do or religious or well-situated families, and then take up Krishna consciousness again, and then from there go back to Godhead or not. That, or if they've gotten further, they're more nice, they're basically stable in their Krishna consciousness, they'll take birth in the family of devotees. They won't go to the heavenly planets. Right? And if they think of Krishna at the time, then they'll go to Krishna. And we see is that depending on how much you've developed, even the neophyte, if he remembers Krishna at the time of death, will go to Krishna. So they're on the liberated platform, but their attachment to Krishna is not so great. So they're going to be just adjusting with Shravana Dasa, Varna Dasa, they'll be more focused on that area. Right? Because they haven't even gotten really focused on Krishna yet. Then from that, it'll come to Smarana Dasa and it'll move forward. That'll be in Gokul. Yes, but someone else may have come to a more elevated platform with their you know, so then they may be working on lower levels of Smarana Dasa and then move up. Or they may be on advanced levels of Smarana Dasa. Or they may have even gone beyond that into Apandasa. Like that. So whatever is your state of consciousness when you leave, that will be the state of consciousness within Gokul. So you'll be in your spiritual body, but you still have to progress. But the pastimes are designed that those who are already very advanced, they immediately start taking part in the pastimes, and those who are not, later. Like we see the gopis. Now, when Krishna plays the flute and calls the gopis, there are gopis that haven't gotten to the point of Purvarag. So that means they're married, so they're probably at least like 12 years old. Right? And so then they haven't come to that stage in Smarana Dasa they're on Samadhi. Right? But in that pastime they'll develop to there. Is that some sense? Yeah. But then you have someone else who may be more
more developed, right? That they, you have pastimes when Radha and Krishna are interacting and they're very small. They're just little kids, you know, just babies, 2-3 years old. They're moving around, you know, so they have their friends, they're moving around together. So one could already be included in that group at that point. You understand? So the point is there's some you can immediately start being involved, or there may be a kind of a cutoff point where at this point then you are, you know, very much naturally encouraged or inspired to get serious. So that's the thing about Gokul. It accommodates everybody from Krishna and his eternal associates down to the, you know, the newest of those who came to the pastimes. Is that something? Yeah. So that means that in general, karmis go to the heavenly planets, jnanis go to the Brahman, and devotees go back to Godhead. But within it, depending upon their endeavor, then those processes will be quicker and slower and give results at different levels. That makes sense. Yes.
What is antariksha?
Antariksha. Bhuvar. Right? Means you have earth, you have the heaven, you have what's in between. So earth is the earth, right? Then from, you know, Indra's planets and all those things on up, that's Swarga, right? Instead, now what's between the earth and Swarga and what's below the earth, that's Antariksha. Does that make sense? Being thus rid of the material influence, they achieve unlimited happiness in life. The sages continued, O great hero, for this reason you should not be the cause of spoiling the spiritual life of the general populace. Right? Because he's saying, by following words, that if you follow the principles of Dharma, then you're elevated to the heavenly kingdom, and then you become happy. So therefore, you should not spoil the spiritual life of the populace in general. If the spiritual life is spoiled because of your activities, you will certainly fall down from your opulent and royal position. The saintly persons continued, right? It's one thing if they're not following, they have the opportunity, don't follow, they fall down. But the king himself is getting in the way and stopping, then he'll fall down. The saintly person continued, when the king protects the citizens from the disturbances of mischievous ministers, as well as from thieves and rogues, he can, by virtue of such pious activities, accept taxes given by his subjects. Otherwise, he technically shouldn't take taxes. Because the taxes are because he's giving protection. It's not because he's the king. Right? It's because what the king does. Right? You go in the store and just leave money there because it's a store. Right? It's a store. You're supposed to leave money there. Come on, show some respect. Right? No, it's because what the store does. So therefore the king gets taxes not because he's the king, but because he protects the people. That's the idea. Right? So here it says, protects from mischievous ministers as well as thieves and rogues, because within the governance itself, you always have to check that the people in the government aren't creating trouble. So you can't say, well, that's their thing, you know, we didn't ask them to do that. No, it's their business to correct them, because if they don't, they get reaction. Right? In other words, if a minister is making trouble, the reaction of that goes to the king. Right? So it's the king's business to make sure it doesn't happen. Not because so he has to get reaction. That's just a side inspiration, but because he's bothering the people. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask about simple reaction. So, actually one devotee was telling me he wanted to buy an Ahimsa Mridanga.
An Ahimsa Mridanga.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So, okay. Then he ordered it and he asked the devotees. Can you give me guarantee that it is actually an Nisamitanga? And the devotee said, well, nowadays I cannot guarantee you because there is so much demand of mridangas. It's so difficult to get a dead cow to make a mridanga. I mean, naturally dead cow to make a mridanga. So this devotee was wondering whether this is already a karmic reaction, because on the other hand, like Prabhupada said, if you offer to Krishna the milk of a cow that was abused, but still the cow gets benefits. So he was saying, if we make mridangas, even if the cows are not that, didn't die naturally, still the cow may get benefited because it's a yuga dharma. We need to
make yes. But the point is, it's like this. If you have from ahimsa cows, you take advantage of that. If not, you get whatever you can. Because what's more important, my adherence to ahimsa or the Sankirtan movement? You understand? This is the point where pranamoy drops off the map and basically you end up in hell. You understand? Because if I don't get the mridanga, therefore there's no kirtan because I'm so Mr. Ahimsa. You know, what about, and Mr. Ahimsa, does he have a computer? Okay, how much was the earth raped for that computer? It's the statistics are, for one computer, it takes 1 ton of raw materials from the earth to make it. Okay. You ever seen the machines that dig stuff out of the earth, how big they are? They're basically as big as this building. They're that big. I mean, you're talking about serious Uber content. Right? Now, the earth is not dead. And you're digging. Right? That cow is dead. Whether you make a mridanga out of its skin or not, it's dead. Now you make a skin out of the mridanga out of the skin, great, they get benefit. But it's not that you killed the cow and then made the mridanga. But your computer, you're actually right now, this moment, harassing the earth to get it. So we want to talk nonviolence here. You understand? So therefore we have to be careful that devotees, it's a good thing, the ahimsa. In other words, if you have a choice, why wouldn't you take it? But at the same time, being engaged in Krishna's service, if you're engaging in Krishna's service, it's not that you have a mridanga just because it looks cool, right? You want to walk down the street and people look, wow, what a nice drum. Hey, where'd you get that? You know, does that make sense? So it's probably a very rare devotee. It's all about personal prestige that he's buying a mridanga, right? It's generally connected more to kirtan. And even at maximum, it's mixed. But it's about the kirtan, though they may want to look cool when they do kirtan. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is this being engaged in the Lord's service. So we have to know what's primary here. See, what's being taken is the ahimsa is the primary. No, ahimsa is a ideal within the secondary. The primary is devotional service. The primary is we worship Krishna with the natural items of that are offered to him. Milk, fruit, vegetables, grain, sugar, these kind of things. These are offered to Krishna. Now, we can get nice things, we get it. We can't get nice things, we offer it anyway, because it's Krishna's anyway. Right? In other words, that cow's milk belongs to Krishna whether you offer it or not. Now, of that, but there's the principle that you're making the endeavor to please him as a person. So all this stuff, well, God wouldn't want it and this and that, you know, this all is really nice as a pranamoy person. As a devotee, this has zero meaning. You know what I'm saying? So one has to be very, very careful in these things. And the only reason devotees are worried about it is because it's modern. It's going on in society now. If it's not going on in society now, do you think anybody really cares? They absolutely don't. It's just that it's in the news, people are talking about it, it's the thing to talk about, so devotees talk about it. If the karmis weren't talking about it, devotees wouldn't be talking about it. Then they'll say, oh, that's archaic, that's old-fashioned. You know, so who cares about such social concerns? It's more pious than someone who's just a gross sense gratifier, but generally most of the time, gross sense gratifiers aren't buying mridangas. You know what I'm saying? So that's the consideration, right? You know, and especially when it comes to the cows. See, it's not that if people didn't buy leather, the karmis would leave the cows alone. Right? They'd just be, you know, who cares? You know, just like there's something that nobody worries about, so they don't harvest it. Right? But cows are going to kill and eat them anyway. Right? So if you really want to do some benefit to the people, then you get a mridanga and you do Hari Nam so that all these people get some benefit, some piety, so that maybe in the future they'll give up the need for meat eating. You have to get rid of meat eating. That's the point. Leather is a secondary aspect. You understand? So, like that. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, completely. Yes. I just remember he also said that, you know, Sankirtan devotees, I mean, book distributors, so for example, they use leather bags because they're stronger. So.
Yeah, so it's used in Krishna service. That's the whole point. If it's engaged in Krishna service, you use it. It means if there's something else that's nice and all that, you can get that also. You know? They have this. They have bags also made out of, you know, this military grade fabric. They're also pretty strong, but nobody knows about these things unless they know about military stuff, military clothes, military paraphernalia. Because there are people out there that buy this stuff because they want it because it is strong, the strongest. You understand? So, you know, if they don't, what the point is whatever you have. Using Krishna's service. You know, and if you have a choice for something that has more piety to it, you would take it naturally. But it's not that I won't do devotional service because there's not a pious option. You know, since when in Malachism, Yavana is known for being pious anyway? You know, does that make sense? Thus, a pious king can certainly enjoy himself in this world as well as in the life after death. Right? Because if he takes care of his citizens, everything goes nicely, everything's prosperous. So the citizens do well, he does well, everything. Right? If they're prosperous, there's more tax. So that means he's more prosperous. Right? But if he doesn't protect them, then neither are the citizens prosperous, so the tax is very minimal. And the reactions from not protecting the citizens, that's going to take care of the rest of one's, you know, going to hell. If one takes care, then this lifetime he's comfortable. Next lifetime he will be, because he performed his duties. Does that make sense? Srila 15 to 17, Srila Prabhupada elaborates. The duty of a pious king is described very nicely in this verse. His first and foremost duty is to give protection to the citizens from thieves and rogues, as well as from ministers who are no better than thieves and rogues. Right? That's why you always have to see that the ministers and that have noble qualities. It's all about qualities. When you're dealing on the governmental level, then you only choose people based on good qualities, not on skill. You just don't pick people on skill in government. It's always means those who have positions of authority. If they're just they pushing papers, then you may look at skill, but you also have to make sure that they're not going to create trouble. So that's why you're always watching. So now if bureaucrats especially you have to watch, they're going to go off the rails easily because it's not about quality, it's about their skill, right? Because they're shooters, right? Now those who are in a position of authority, it should be the qualities. But being in a position of authority, sometimes they can get distracted by the situation. So the king has to see that that's kept in line. Right? They're basically doing okay. Sometimes something goes off, they just correct those moments and then they continue. Right? They've proven themselves to not actually be capable of doing the duties properly. And that they've been, you know, instructed, they've been, you know, adjustments have been made, but still there's problem. Then they're removed. But in any case, it's the king's business to see that those in positions of authority and those who are, you know, in the lower levels of governments, that none of them give trouble to the people. That's his business. That's his main business, not other things. His thought, sitting in a meeting, making plans, is no. His main business is protecting the people. You sit in meetings and make plans to do this. But if you don't know what your goal is,
how do you know what you're going to do? Is that the other thing? Formerly, ministers were appointed by the king and were not elected. Consequently, if the king was not very pious or strict, the ministers would become thieves and rogues and exploit the innocent citizens. It is the king's duty to see that there is no increase of thieves and rogues, either in the government secretariat or in the departments of public affairs. Right? So in other words, in the higher levels or on the lower levels. Right? If a king cannot give protection to citizens from thieves and rogues, both in the government service and in public affairs, he has no right to exact taxes from them. The king was the supreme executive personality. And if he caught any minister stealing like thieves and rogues, he would at once have them killed or dismissed from service. It was the duty of the kings to kill thieves and rogues. It was similarly his duty to immediately kill dishonest ministers in government service. By such strict vigilance, the king could run the government very well, and the citizens would be happy to have such a king. The conclusion is that unless the king is perfectly able to give protection to the citizens from rogues and thieves, he has no right to levy taxes from the citizens for his own sense gratification. However, if he gives all protection to the citizens and levies taxes upon them, he can live very happily and peacefully in this life, and at the end of this life be elevated to the heavenly kingdom, or even to the Vaikunthas, where he will be happy in all respects. Right? So it's clear. This is the business of government. Right? The others are details how to affect all this. Right? Does that make sense? So the primary thing is protection of the citizens. How is that done? By seeing that they're not disturbed by thieves and rogues. What's the detail of that? Now you look into the people on the street and the businesses and the government and anywhere where they can be cheating the people and see that they're removed. Right? Does that make sense? Or if you have other kingdoms and that, they're also trying to steal away the facility of the kingdom, therefore give disturbance to the citizens, then that has to be stopped. But you understand, this is what's going on. So now all this has to be managed. Therefore, there's taxes, there's the bureaucracy, the treasury, the administration, all these things so they can do this. So we see is how far down is actually the administrative management. But generally, that's taken to be the top. And that's above the Brahmins and sages. So these are systems that are ineffective. All you have to do is look around and you see in the world how effective are these systems. Because it's not that they have wrong elements. They don't know how to use the elements or what proportion to use them in or what balance to make between them. Right? That's the difference.
The king is supposed to be pious in whose state and cities the general populace strictly observes the system of 8 social orders of Varna and Ashram.
Right? So if they're following Varna Ashram, then you say that king is pious. They're not following Varna Ashram, that king's not so pious.
And where all citizens engage in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead by their particular occupations.
Right?
So now it's that they're following that. That means you have a social order. You can say, no, but we're devotees. But if we're devotees, why do we have managers?
You understand?
Oh, we just chant Hare Krishna. Yes, so then we don't need management either. We just chant Hare Krishna. You understand? Otherwise, it's that, oh, we just chant. We don't need all these brahminical rules, but we need management. No, if you just chant, you don't need any of it. So we need management means then you need what is managed, and that's the Varnashram system. Now the whole point is to do it in connection with devotion. So therefore the Brahmins are doing their duties to please the Lord in devotion. The administrators are doing their duties to please the Lord in devotion. The general populace is doing their duties to please the Lord in devotion. But if you're talking, so you can just have a bunch of individuals around that all they do is do Hari Nam and just sit there, hey, let's do that and do that, let's go here. No, no, this is better than that, and then they just work it out and get in the bus and go. Great, you don't need any real management or anything like this. Fine. We don't need so much Varnashram, we don't need all those things. But that's your point. If we need management, we need Varnashram. You know? That's the whole point. We can't finesse it on Brahminical, which is outside of the realm of our experience, being from backgrounds that don't support that. But things that are important, you know, men and money and influence, and that's very important in Krishna consciousness. You can't do like that. You know what I'm saying? Because if we just chant Hare Krishna, that means we don't need administration, we don't need management, we don't need money, we don't need families. All we have to do is just, you know, somehow or another find some place we can all hang out and go out on Harinam. Right? Distribute some books. Take prasad. Hari Bol. Did I miss anything? Dancing and being happy, right? You understand? But as soon as he introduced families, money, then there must be management. That means there must be varnashram. It's a package. We can't say we take part of it and not the other, right? Right? I like the house part, I just don't like the mortgage part. Right? And the house is so big, and the mortgage thing's just a piece of paper. Can't we just get rid of this piece of paper? We're devotees anyway. What do we need to pay a mortgage for, right? Does that make sense? Somehow or another, the repo men don't seem to appreciate. They somehow or another put more value in the piece of paper. Does that make sense? The king is... Okay. 18. Srila Prabhupada comments that in particular, the sages mentions the king's responsibility to be the guardian of the God-centered social system of Varna Ashram. The state's duty and the citizen's duty are very nicely explained in this verse. The activities of the government head or king, as well as the activities of the citizens, should be so directed that ultimately everyone engages in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The king or government head is supposed to be the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is therefore supposed to see that things go on nicely, and that the citizens are situated in the scientific social order comprised of four varnas and four ashrams. Right? That's their business. Right? So one's supposed to know. Right? Devotees are going out of their way to have seminars to learn skills sets for making money. So why not have seminars to learn the skill sets to understand Varnashram? Understand? And you can say, well, you know, nobody understands it. But what? Who understands money? Go ahead, knock me out. Who's making lots of money? Right? But it's not the people who aren't endeavoring. So, therefore, people don't understand Varnashram. It's not that we don't endeavor. You understand? Otherwise, we see as we pick and choose. And where do we pick and choose? We pick what we're used to from our own conditioning, and we reject what's not from our conditioning. So basically, it comes down, if it's from modern culture, we accept it, and if it's from a Vedic culture, we reject it. This is not pious. It's not progressive. Does that make sense? By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all-pervading, a man can, in the performance of his own duty, attain perfection. Right? So you don't have to do something separate, because you say, one could be worried, but you know, I have to be practical, I have to take care of my life, so that's what Varnashram is for. Right? Family life, where does it fall? In ashram. Right? Is there grihastha ashram in the Vedic system? Right? Are there grihasthas in the Vedic system? It's a good chance the majority of the people are grihasthas. Okay? Now, is there such a thing as an occupational consideration to maintain that grihastha ashram? It's called varna. It's basically 50% of the consideration. So now, when we... And so, therefore, taking that ashram and that varna and connecting it to the Lord, that's what we can do in devotional service to be practical. Right? So we have our sadhana, which is direct, going to the temple, chanting japa, hearing Bhagavatam, worshipping Tulsi, associating with devotees, worshipping the deities, you're worshipping the spiritual master, respecting the Vaishnavas, respecting the Dham, right? All these different things are there. That's direct. But now the rest of the day,
what are you going to do with it? Now, so Varnashram connects all that to Krishna. The modern does not connect it to Krishna, I'm sorry to say. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that we say practical, Varnashram is the only practical thing. Other social systems aren't practical. If they were so good, why aren't they working? Why isn't everybody happy? You know, that's the difficulty. So Varnashram is the only thing that can. You know, and if you want to point out faults in Varnashram, that's why the people following it. The system is perfect. People who follow it may not be perfect. Now, the modern systems are, one, not perfect, and the people following them are not perfect. And even if you have somebody perfectly following a non-perfect system, what do you get? Something less than standard. Right? So, this is, we see here, is Prabhupada's making these points very clear. When they're coming out, the sages are speaking. Thus, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Shudras, and Vaishyas must execute their prescribed duties, as these duties are stated in the Shastras. In this way, everyone can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The king or government head has to see that the citizens are thus engaged. In other words, the state of the government must not deviate from its duty by declaring that the state is a secular one, which has no interest in whether or not the people advance in Varnashram Dharma. Yes, so here, that's the business of administration, to see that they're following and everybody else is following. It's not about just money and not, it means, as we pointed out here before, why is it that a government officer or someone involved in the administration shouldn't be taking money? Why not? What's the reason?
Abuse of power.
It's abuse of power. And what's the problem with abuse of power? You understand? See, this is where it goes. Everyone just takes it for granted. Of course, yeah, of course. You know, but all you have to do is get a whole bunch of people together with torches and pitchforks and say something very convincingly, and they're doing it. You know, yes, all their problems because that guy up on the hill, you know, he doesn't work with everybody else. He just sits there with his nose in his books all day. You know, we should get him. Yeah, yeah, let's go burn his house down. Yeah, you know, and it happens. That's European history. You know? That's basically, you can just go from one of those to the next, you know, where they're going, yeah, look at the king, he's sitting there, you know, and his queen's saying we should eat cake, we don't even have bread, yeah, you know, like this, you know, and then, you know, the king, he sits all the way over there, and we're over here in the colonies, and he takes his taxes, he doesn't do anything, yeah, yeah, you know, let's throw the tea in the ocean, you know, so that was the big revolution, toss the tea into the Bay of Boston, right? Yeah. Boston Sea Harbor. You understand? So that's what's just going on. The point is that, okay, now why? And as soon as you ask it, oh, that's obvious, so then, yes. Why is it wrong that the guy abuses power?
Then he's not protecting the people.
Right? Yes. He's not taking part. In other words, he doesn't directly necessarily protect the people, but he's not taking part in the process that protects the people. That's why it's wrong. You understand? On the social platform, because that's what everybody's jumping up and down. When everybody says truth and honesty and openness, straightforward, transparency. Did I leave any one now? Okay. All these, they simply mean social, pranamoy. No one's talking spiritual here. Don't fool yourself. Okay. Yes. So, that's on that level. But now, on the next level, who does the money belong to, actually?
Krishna.
It belongs to Krishna. Okay, so then, what is the, as a devotee of Krishna, how should money be used? Properly, which means? For him, means in Krishna's service. So, these are the real reasons that it's a problem. Not that, oh, it's dishonest, oh, it's self-centered. That's the person's
individual personal weaknesses that are bad for himself. But why is it bad for the community? Why is it bad for Krishna consciousness? That's not being discussed. That's not being explained. That's not coming up in the meetings. That's not being effective. Does that make sense? So that's how far it has to be taken. That's what Prabhupada and the sages are talking about. We just take it that, oh, it's, you know, these are old fashioned or this or that. But it just rolls off the tongue, it's old fashioned. What, explain it. What's so old about it? You know how old breathing air is? I mean, that goes back billions of years. Now, that you don't get much more archaic than that. You know, you walk down the street, you see somebody that, you're still breathing? Man, you know, we stopped that years ago. Yeah, that's like, that's so 80s. Right? Isn't it? So that's the whole thing. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, everybody's perfectly fine with it. You know, and supposedly, in the modern thing, you know, when man wasn't there, the animals were doing it. It's that old. Right? The amoebas were doing it. So it's like, you know, hey, isn't it time we move on? You know, the new thing, the cutting edge thing, is giving up eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. None of this old archaic stuff. You understand? So what we see is, when devotees talk this old, it's archaic, it's ancient, they pick and choose totally according to their mundane conditioning. You know what I'm saying? This is general. Now, of course, in this, because someone's used this terminology and these methods, it doesn't mean that the person themselves doesn't see the proper Krishna consciousness. And the person who's trying to do the opposite is missing the point. Somebody's trying to be Vedic, but is missing the point, so they're not applying it to time, place, and circumstance. And so then it'll be pointed out that how you're applying it is improper. Right? Does that make sense? I want to avoid the backlash of the other way. Right? In other words, pitchforks and torches don't work either way. Right? Not that the, how you say? You know, the citizens get out the pitchforks and torches, or that, you know, the trolls under the bridge rise up and get out pitchforks and torches, you know. You know, so, yeah.
Actually, someone that has a managerial service was telling me that they don't know where is the limit, like if somebody has personal weaknesses but is doing a very nice service, what is the limit where by doing again and again something that is not proper, they should remove the person?
No, but is improper where? In their job or in the... It's just like this. Let us just say, for example, you have a guy at the office. He sits in his cubicle, he does his work, he does everything nice. He goes home. When he goes home, he is weird. You know, you just don't want to know what this guy does. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? Okay, so now, should he get fired from his job? So, if his weirdness doesn't affect his service, what's the problem? But, so from that side it's not. Now, if by his bad behavior, he is affecting the community, that the community doesn't feel protected, right? And so then, now, is there any attitude that he is, you know, within the administration, so therefore he feels more comfortable to behave badly in the public, or he just behaves that badly anyway, it has nothing to do with his position. So you have to define all these things. And the point is for the public, he has to adjust. At the same time, the public also has to be able to tell the difference, but it's understood the public doesn't have the brain to tell the difference. You know, that's the difficulty. One would hope in a Vaishnava community that they would, by the devotional service, have more brain, but you still have to use the principles that you use on the public, because in general, pitchforks and torches come out very easily. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, what do you call it? Switzerland, right? You know, there's the saying, Switzerland does not have an army. Switzerland is an army. Right? So everybody in their closet or under their sinks got their machine gun and everything else, and, you know, whatever is necessary for their particular part in their, you know, like this. You know, so therefore,
in general, you know, neophyte devotees tend to, you know, keep their torches and pitchforks close by in their closet, under their sink, or someplace, you know, easily handy. So any little issue comes up, immediately everybody's out rioting. But Krishna consciousness is a whole different thing. It's not that something's not wrong. It's why it's wrong. You understand? That somebody's taking money, and they shouldn't be, is wrong. But actually, why is it wrong? That makes the difference in five levels of consciousness. So just because it's wrong, and that doesn't make it now the, you know, the overall, what do you call it when something it applies everywhere to everything, solves all problems, you know? You understand? But it's just meant that, okay, there's this, and then we can use it anywhere. You know, it's not like El Nino or something, you know?
Panacea
or something like that. But, you know, it's just this, you know, El Nino? I'm not saying it right.
Huh?
It's not German. How do you say it?
El Nino.
El Nino. Okay. We all know El Nino. It's a condition where somewhere on the west coast of South America up to California, basically Baja, California, I think. Right? Baja in Bengali means not good, bad. And so I kind of think it's like that. Well, whatever it is. That something changed in the current, so it changes the whole weather pattern, so it throws off everything when it rains, when it does, whether you get rain or not. So some place that doesn't get rain gets tons of rain, it snows on Venice Beach or something, or you know, it's like, you know, you got 30 degree weather up in Alaska, right? You know, the old ladies are dying, it's so hot there, you know, like that, you know. So you get all these changes and all that. And there was a time, not this time, this, but one time before, two times before, I think it has a 7-year cycle, everything was blamed on El Nino. Something went wrong in the government, right? You know, something happened. Well, it's El Nino, and like that. You know, something in the economy, El Nino. You know, everything was El Nino. It was really, it got to the point where it became a joke, and everybody was goofing on it, that it was so like that. So this is not that I say, oh, truth and openness and all that, and that's like El Nino, that solves anything. I can go into anywhere and go in like this, you know, so all rights and regulations go, you know, like that. You know, does that make sense? So people like that. There's something that, you know, if I have this, I can just go break down doors, look through everything. I love to go in the guy's house. I've never seen it. I'd love to look through this stuff and know all their secrets, but I have no reason. But now I have something, truth, and this and that. And so now we can do that. And we have the right. You understand? So that mentality is what is pointed out can't happen. It's got to be about protection of the people, and that means the government itself, the head of the leaders, and those who are officers underneath them, secretary, everybody has to avoid that. It can't be done, and the populace themselves can't do this. Today, people engaged in government service and people who rule over the citizens have no respect for the Varnashram Dharma. They complacently feel that the state is secular, right? So probably use the word complacently here. They just feel, I don't have to worry about it because, right? In other words, Varnashram's not my job because, you know, it stays secular. Right? So you don't have to worry about this. So in such a government, no one can be happy. The people must follow the Varnashram Dharma, and the king must see that they are following it nicely. So that's the duty. That's the actual point. Because if you're supposed to be engaged in the Lord's service, you do that through performance of your duty. Right? You can say, well, what is the king supposed to do? The king's part of the Varnashram system. So therefore, he is the king within the Varnashram system, supposed to see that everybody else is following the Varnashram system. So that means he must know the Varnashram system. So the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas have to know the Varnashram system, otherwise technically they can't function. Others, how much they need to know to function within it is enough, but they don't have to know necessarily how it runs. But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas have to know how it runs. Right? Then it'll work nicely. But here the complacent is secular, so therefore we don't have to worry about it, means I don't have to endeavor, means it's just one more thing that I don't have to worry about. The sages continued,
O noble one, if the king sees that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of the cosmic manifestation, and the Supersoul within everyone, his worship, the Lord, will be satisfied. 19. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 19 explains the mutual duty of the government and the citizens in executing Varnashram Dharma. It is a fact that the government's duty is to see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied by the activities of the people, as well as by the activities of the government, right? So that the people are doing devotional service according, you know, engaging their duties in the Lord's service, and the government's doing the same. Not that their business is to see that everybody else is doing, they're not doing, right? That's you know, the modern kind of thing is that I'm in a position, I'm seeing that everybody else is doing what they're supposed to be doing, but what am I supposed to be doing? Yeah, I got a full-time job watching that everybody else does. With it. And, you know, who's got a job like this? What varna is that? What ashram is that? What is it?
Babysitter.
Oh, okay. Babysitters are nice, so I guess it's a good job. Okay. Head babysitter. There is no possibility of happiness if the government or citizenry have no idea of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Who is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation, or if they have no knowledge of Bhuta Bhavana, who is Vishvatma, the Supersoul, the soul of everyone's soul. So in other words, the Varnashram is the secondary because it only deals with the soul, with the social, while the devotional, that's the actual spiritual platform. So devotees have more of an understanding of ashram and the spiritual, but very minimal about varna. And so we see as devotionally things develop in the devotee community, but socially they don't. And there's so much talk about social development, but the only way to develop socially is varnashram. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulties. What will actually help is what's being seen as it's not necessary. Somebody's sick and, you know, they're trying to find an alternative to medicine. You know, I'm sick, take this medicine. No, that's so archaic, taking medicine and all that. There must be some other modern system. I'll just say I'm okay. You understand? The conclusion is that without engaging in devotional service, neither the citizens nor the government can be happy in any way. Right? Because if you do follow Varnashram but not devotional service, socially be okay, but the soul won't be satisfied. Right? If you perform devotional service, then on one level the soul's satisfied, but on the level where the soul's attached to the conditioning, which means the social, they won't be satisfied. Right? So you have to have both. But of them, the devotional service is the prominent. So if you're going to have one without the other, better Krishna consciousness and not Varnashram, then Varnashram and no Krishna consciousness. At the present moment, neither the king nor the governing body is interested in seeing that the people are engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, they are more interested in advancing the machinery of sense gratification, right? Because sense gratification generates money. Money means taxes. Taxes means the government can run. Right? Then you're in your power. So, you know, it's funny because then the only point of having the money is your own facility. It should be the purpose of the government having money is to protect the people. Right? So Prabhupada points out the king or governing body. So it means whether you have a king or any other form of government. Right? If it's not Krishna conscious, then... Consequently, they are becoming more and more implicated in the complex machinery of the stringent laws of nature. People should be free from the entanglement of the three modes of material nature, and the only process by which this is possible is surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is advised in Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, neither the government nor the people in general have any idea of this. They are simply interested in sense gratification and being happy in this life. The word nija sashane, in his own governmental duty, indicates that both the government and the citizens are responsible for the execution of Varnashram Dharma. Once the populace is situated in the Varnashram Dharma, there is every possibility of real life and prosperity, both in this world and the next. Right? So when people talk about real life, just being real, just being practical, the only thing Prabhupada is pointing out, the only thing is if it's Varnashram. You understand? Now, we're not saying is that the person who doesn't know anything about it is new to these things, that they don't just do something practical in their life, how to maintain themselves so they can be involved in devotional service. Because for that kind of person, then devotional service is the prominent thing in their consciousness anyway. And doing all their other activities in life are secondary. They're not so important to them. So they don't know, they're not obliged. But when one comes to the point is that these secondary aspects are important, right? That means you've been around long enough to have learned something about Varnashram. And if one's in leadership position, one has to know about it. It's imperative that one knows. Right? Prabhupada talks about it. He explains it. It's not a big deal. It's not rocket science. Right? Not for administrators. Not for Brahmins. Right? Just like rocket science is not a problem for a rocket scientist. Right? So, therefore, if one knows this, then it goes nicely. Otherwise, if one's trying to develop materially, then the only way to do it is through Varnashram. If one doesn't worry about developing materially because one's just inspired in Krishna consciousness, and one just does whatever one can to get by, that's good enough. Because they're situated in the primary, the secondary is just basically just maintaining. But if you're trying to develop the secondary, the only way to do that is Varnashram. Does that make sense? So you can distinguish between those who don't know, haven't had a chance to learn, but they're enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness, and those who have been around long enough that they should have learned something. Right? And you see, those administrators and managers who understand the nature of those people they're working with and engage them accordingly, their projects go better. The more they understand that, the better it goes. The less they understand that, the less well it goes. So all Varnashram is know what people's nature is. Not today, it's a popular thing, psychology, and all that. That's all Varnashram is. What's the psychophysical nature of people? And so therefore, what they're best suited for. Right? So, now, what's his name? Our man, Freud. Now, he's focused on people who are crazy. Right? And so he can point out how you're crazy and in how many ways you're crazy. But as far as spending any time, what a person who's not crazy should do and how all that connects to the absolute truth, there is zero development in that area. Right? So devotees get involved in psychology and that'll help in this. But how does it help? Where's the link? Okay, you know their mind works, but you don't know what their mind should be doing. And you don't know how the mind and the doing connects. Only the Vedic shows that. Right? That's why we study creation. Then you actually know how the mind and the creation are connected, so therefore how to work with it. This is advised in Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, neither the government nor the people in general have any idea of this. They are simply interested in sense gratification and being happy in this life. Okay. Oh, we already read that. Okay. Next verse. Quote, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped by the great demigods, controllers of universal affairs. When he is satisfied, nothing is impossible to achieve. For this reason, all the demigods, presiding deities of different planets, as well as the inhabitants of their planets, take great pleasure in offering all kinds of paraphernalia for his worship. 20. Srila Prabhupada writes, all Vedic civilization is summarized in this verse. All living entities, either on this planet or on other planets, have to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by their respective duties. Right? That's what's Vedic. We understand Vedic means the authorized systems that the great personalities use that come from Shastra that are directed at pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's Vedic. Otherwise, even there's the academics, in their enthusiasm to enjoy mental speculation, then for their own pleasure, then they, what is Vedic? How can we say what's Vedic? The moguls came in, there's so much mixture and this and that. How do you know what's real? So real is is connected to the Lord. In the Vedas, it is also stated, Eko Bahunam Yogi Dhati Kaman, Kato Upanishad 2.2.13. From the Vedas, we understand that he is supplying everyone's necessities. And we can actually see that the lower animals, the birds and the bees, have no business or profession, yet they are not dying for want of food. They are all living in nature's way, and they all have the necessities of life provided, namely, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Because that's all, when we're being practical, all we're doing is supporting eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Right? That's what we're trying to arrange. Right? That's the whole purpose. So that's being carried out. The animals do their duties within nature. If human does his duties within nature, everything's taken care of. It's when man tries to do outside of his duties that the problem comes up. So all it is animals by the super soul just do what they're supposed to do. They don't have a choice. They just do it. Their choice was before as a human whether they wanted to remain human or become an animal. They took the choice, now they're an animal, so they just be that animal. Right? But for human beings, then the definition of how to be human and how to fit into the universal affair is defined in Varnashram. So all Varnashram is how to fit into the universe, how to be in harmony with the universe. You know, nice stuff. Right? But it's taken New Age is how you do that. No, Varnashram is how you do it. New Age is already included in Varnashram. Okay. Human society, however, has artificially created a type of civilization which makes one forgetful of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Modern society even enabled one to forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead's grace and mercy. Not just that you forgot him, but then if there's a problem, you remember him. But even just, you don't even remember his grace and mercy, you just try to work it out yourself. So, in other words, how to be a demon as opposed to a demigod. Right, the suras, they surrender to the Lord. Even if they forget, they surrender when there's a problem, because they remember his grace and mercy. Asura means you don't do that. You just make a new plan. Consequently, modern civilized man is always unhappy and in need of things. People do not know that the ultimate goal of life is to approach Lord Vishnu and satisfy him. They have taken this materialistic way of life as everything, and have become captivated by materialistic activities. Indeed, their leaders are always encouraging them to follow this path, right? Because if they follow sense gratification, then they work hard to make money and they spend money. Now, if money is being made and spent, then you can get taxes. You understand? So therefore, the government encourages them. Right? Because in the Vedic, they would encourage God consciousness. So because of God consciousness, you perform your duties. Therefore, there's prosperity. You're giving in charity. You're paying your taxes. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's either by God consciousness or sense gratification. Either way, you're inspiring the people to act. You know. And the general populace, being ignorant of the laws of God, are following their blind leaders down the path of unhappiness. In order to rectify this world situation, all people should be trained in Krishna consciousness and act in accordance with the Varnashram system. The state should also see that the people are engaged in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the primary duty of the state. The Krishna conscious movement was started to convince the general populace to adopt the best process by which to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus solve all problems. Right? So Prabhupada's pointing, the best process. Right? So devotional service is the best process. Then within the process, what are the best options for doing this? Proper performance of your duties, how to apply those into the various situations. Right? This is the best. So we should not profess philosophies that encourage a 10th class standard and say, no, this is good enough. Right? No, you want the best. So whatever is the best available, that's what we use. So. The sages conclude, "Dear King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with the predominating deities, is the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices in all planets. The Supreme Lord is the sum total of the three Vedas, the owner of everything, and the ultimate goal of all austerity. Therefore, your countrymen should engage in performing various sacrifices for your elevation. Indeed, you should always direct them towards the offering of sacrifices. When all the brahmanas engage in performing sacrifices in your kingdom, all the demigods who are plenary expansions of the Lord will be very much satisfied by their activities and will give you your desired result. Therefore, O hero, do not stop the sacrificial performances. If you stop them, you will disrespect the demigods." Right, so this is the main problem. It's not that he was not keeping the thieves and rogues in check. That he was doing. But then he was going and stopping people's performance of sacrifice. So they're only asking him to do that. Just stop that. So even if on the other side he doesn't have great character and he's not an ideal king, but if he keeps peace in the kingdom, fine. Right? The citizens are protected. You know, sacrifice is going on. Then it will work. It's not ideal, but it'll work. Does that make sense?
Verses 23 to 35. The sages kill King Vena, who tries to imitate Lord Vishnu. King Vena replied, "You are not at all experienced."
Right? He's saying this to the sages.
"It is very much regrettable that you are maintaining something which is not religious and are accepting it as religious."
Right? So he's propounding the mode of ignorance as if it's the absolute truth, right?
"Indeed, I think you are giving up your real husband who maintains you and are searching after some paramour to worship." Footnote 7. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, King Vena said, "I am your maintainer. If I forbid you to pluck fruits or roots today, you will immediately die."
Right. So he's thinking he's the one who's...
Srila Prabhupada explains, "King Vena was so foolish that he accused the saintly sages of being inexperienced like small children. In other words, he was accusing them of not having perfect knowledge. In this way, he could reject their advice and make accusations against them, comparing them to a woman who does not care for her husband, who maintains her but goes to satisfy a paramour who does not maintain her. The purpose of this simile is apparent. It is the duty of the Kshatriyas to engage the Brahmanas in different ways of religious activities, and the king is supposed to be the maintainer of the Brahmins. The Brahmins do not worship the king but instead go to the demigods. They are as polluted as unchaste women." Those who out of gross ignorance do not worship the king, who is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, experience happiness neither in this world nor in the world after death. Right? So in other words, he kind of is using the philosophy, but he's using it to put himself in the center of everything. You are so much devoted to the demigods, but who are they? Indeed, your affection for these demigods is exactly like the affection of the unchaste woman who neglects her married life and gives all attention to her paramour. Right? So he's pointing it out. I'm Lord Vishnu, so why are you worried about the demigods? Right? He missed the point that they were talking about the Supreme Lord, the demigods supporting, and therefore him as the king, his servant there. He's thinking, no, I'm the Supreme Lord. Why are you worried about the demigods? So all the sacrifices are performing to the demigods. Right? He's not complaining that they're doing sacrifice. They're not doing sacrifice to him. Right? That's what he's expecting. So that's the point, is why are you worshiping the demigods when you should be worshiping me? Right. Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, Vayu, the master of air, Yama, the superintendent of death, the sun god, the director of rainfall, Kuvera, the treasurer, the moon god, the predominating deity of the earth, Agni, the fire god, Varuna, the lord of the waters, and all others who are great and competent to bestow benedictions or to curse, all abide in the body of the king. That's what we were talking before about those eight perfections. For this reason, the king is known as the reservoir of all demigods, who are simply parts and parcels of the king's body.
Right? No, it means there's a portion of them represented in the king, and that's why they can do their power. So he's just reversed everything, and so therefore he's the king, he's the supreme. Demigods are already included there, so therefore all your worship that you're saying should be done to him. King Vena continued, "For this reason, O Brahmanas, you should abandon your envy of me, and by your ritualistic activities, you should worship me and offer all paraphernalia. If you are intelligent, you should know that there is no personality superior to me who can accept the first oblations of all sacrifices." 24-28. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport to verse 28. As stated by Krishna himself throughout Bhagavad Gita, there is no truth superior to me, to him. King Vena was imitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead and was also speaking out of false pride, presenting himself as the Supreme Lord. These are all characteristics of a demoniac person. The great sage Maitreya continued, "Thus the king, who became unintelligent due to his sinful life and deviated from the right path, became actually bereft of all good fortune. He could not accept the requests of the great sages, which the sages put before him with great respect, and therefore he was condemned." Right? Because they came as the king he's representing, so even though something's going wrong, his position as king is still to be respected. And so they first try to deal with him that. When he proves that he's not qualified to be the king, then you remove. But first you deal very nicely and properly. "My dear Vidura, all good fortune unto you. The foolish king, who thought himself very learned, thus insulted the great sages and And the sages, being broken-hearted by the king's words, became very angry at him. All the great saintly sages immediately cried, 'Kill him, kill him. He is the most dreadful sinful person. If he lives, he will certainly turn the whole world into ashes in no time.'" 29-31. Srila Prabhupada comments in purport to verse 31. Saintly persons are greatly very kind to all kinds of living entities. But they are not always unhappy when a serpent or a scorpion is killed. It is not good for saintly persons to kill, but they are encouraged to kill demons, who are exactly like serpents and scorpions. Therefore, all the sages decided to kill King Vena, who is so dreadful and dangerous to all human society. We can appreciate the extent to which the saintly sages actually control the king. If the king or government becomes demoniac, it is the duty of a saintly person to upset the government and replace it with deserving persons who follow the orders and instructions of saintly persons. Right? Because as we said, the governance is meant for seeing that the people are God-conscious by the performance of their duties. So, therefore, you need management so that the performance of duties can go on nicely, and you need God-consciousness so that they do that for to please the Lord. Right, so that's there. So all it means is that you replace with a government that can do that. Right? That makes sense. So you have to have both. Otherwise, you have those who suppose they take care of the people. There's not God conscious. There's those who there's God conscious. There's not protection of the people. Does that make sense? So that's the whole difficulty. So it has to be a combination. Right? And then you have those that don't protect and don't bring out God consciousness, so that's really unimportant. The saintly sages continued, "This impious, impudent man does not deserve to sit on the throne at all. He is so shameless that he even dared insult the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu," Srila Prabhupada explains. "One should not at any time tolerate blasphemy and insults against Lord Vishnu or his devotees. Devotee is generally very humble and meek, and he is reluctant to pick a quarrel with anyone, nor does he envy anyone. However, a pure devotee immediately becomes fiery with anger when he sees that that Lord Vishnu or his devotee is insulted. This is the duty of the devotee. Although a devotee maintains an attitude of meekness and gentleness, it is a great fault on his part if you remain silent when the Lord or his devotee is blaspheming." Right? So that meekness and humbleness is himself. But if he blasphemes the Lord or his devotees, then they're very strong. Right? So, but for King Vena, who is simply inauspicious, who could blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose mercy one is awarded all kinds of fortune and opulence? Right? Yeah. The great sages, thus manifesting their covert anger, immediately decided to kill the king. King Vena was already as good as dead due to his blasphemy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they just want to make sure he's going down, but he should not take the kingdom and the citizens with him. So therefore, the sages will remove him. Thus, without using any weapons, the sages killed King Vena simply by high-sounding words. So they uttered mantras, and he was finished. Verses 35 to 46. After all the sages returned to their respective hermitages, the mother of King Vena, Sunita, became very much aggrieved because of her son's death. She decided to preserve the dead body of her son by the application of certain ingredients, by chanting mantras, mantra yogena.
She was able to do that because she was connected to this.
It's part of the perks, come on. You know, it's not all, you know, just one-sided here, you know. It said that she could preserve a dead body, she can't bring it back to life. So in her family, they know how to kill someone and how to preserve the dead body. So, hey, come on. Yeah, I mean, so you see, you know, Egyptians, you know, they learn something, you know, come in that line, you know, morticians, you know, like this, you know, so there's... No? Yeah. She decided, okay. Once upon a time, the same saintly persons, after taking their bath in the river Saraswati, began to perform their daily duties by offering oblations into the sacrificial fires. After this, sitting on the bank of the river, they began to talk about the transcendental person and his pastimes. In those days, there were various disturbances in the country that were creating a panic in society. Therefore, all the sages began to talk amongst themselves. Since the king is dead and there is no protector in the world, misfortune may befall the people in general on account of rogues and thieves. 35 to 37. In his purport to verse 37, Srila Prabhupada writes, whenever there is a disturbance in the state or a panic situation, the property and lives of the citizens become unsafe. This is caused by the uprising of various thieves and rogues. At such a time is to be understood that the ruler or government is dead. All of these misfortunes happened due to the death of King Vena. Thus the saintly persons became very anxious for the safety of the people in general. The conclusion is that even though the saintly persons have no business in political affairs, they are always compassionate upon the people in general. Thus, even though they are always aloof from society, out of mercy and compassion, they consider how the citizens can peacefully execute their rituals and follow the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma. That was the concern of these sages. In this age of Kali, everything is disturbed. Therefore, saintly persons should take to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra as recommended in the Shastras. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. Kalo, Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 17:21. Both for spiritual and material prosperity, everyone should devotedly chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So that's going to be your primary aspect. So since serving the Lord is the primary principle, so the primary principle is executed in this age through the chanting of Hare Krishna. So the Sankirtan movement, the mission, that should be seen, that's going on nicely, and that all the individuals within the state are nicely following this in whatever their capacity and ability. When the sages were carrying on their discussion in this way, they saw a dust storm arising from all directions. The storm was caused by the running of thieves and rogues who were engaged in plundering the citizens. Now that's a lot of... Upon seeing the dust storm, the saintly persons could understand that there was a great deal of irregularities due to the death of King Vena. Without government, the state was devoid of law and order, and consequently there was a great uprising of murderous thieves and rogues who were plundering the riches of the people in general. Although the great sages could subdue the disturbances by their powers, just as they could kill the king, they considered it improper on their part to do so. Thus, they did not attempt to stop the disturbance. Footnote 8. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments on verses 39 to 40. Understanding the disturbance to the population by looters of wealth and killers, and understanding that almost the whole population become thieves, persons capable of preventing this, seeing it happen, the Kshatriyas, protecting only themselves and being indifferent, thinking, why should we protect others, did not stop those who were looting others. The great sages began to think that although a Brahmana is peaceful and impartial because he is equal to everyone, it is still not his duty to neglect poor humans.
Right.
By such neglect, the Brahmana's spiritual powers diminishes, just as water kept in a cracked pot leaks out.
Yes.
Can we say they were irresponsible? For first, they choosing the king.
No, but these are the secondary, but the point is where was the king? Where it means if there was there a proper king and they said no, Venu should be. You understand? There was no king.
My point is not about that they've chosen Venu.
The point is that's where you're given, that's the authority for saying that they are involved.
Yes. My point is now they don't want to take charge.
But did they take charge before of the rogues and rascals?
They found Venu.
Yes. So now, again, they're not going to do it. So what will they do? They'll have to find somebody else. So in other words, it's not their business to come in and rule. It's their business to find someone who can.
So their business is to find a solution.
Their business to find a solution means someone who can properly administer the state. But their business is not to administer the state. So that's the difference. That's why a minister might be a Brahmin, but then that's an occupational thing. Sages in this is an ashram thing. They don't have a varna as such, a duty. Right? So they're pointing out is they're equal to everyone, but they can't let innocent people suffer. Otherwise, then their potency goes down just like a cracked pot. Water will leak out of it.
The next thing is why they didn't do it immediately after they killed Venu. They knew what's going to happen.
Because ministers can carry on. Because before it would have been ministers. But it wasn't going well, so they tried Venu. So Venu was worse than the ministers. So then you see how they do. But it's said here, it's not that Venu is the only Kshatriya in the kingdom. There are other Kshatriyas. But they won't be the king. But none of them are taking charge, none of them are doing anything. So they're expecting, okay, so the Kshatriyas will work something out, the ministers will work something out. You know, they came in, did their thing, that didn't work out, but they corrected what they did. So their obligation of putting Venu in ended when they killed Venu. Because they just brought it back to the position it was before. Does that make sense? So their obligation is finished at that point. Then it just goes back to there's no king. Right? And so then they would just leave it, okay, now it's the royal class. They have to work it out, the ministers. Because normally the sages are in the forest and the crowning of the new king, all that's taken care of by the administration. They don't have anything to do with it. But because there was nothing happening, right, and things weren't going well, they stepped in to try to put in someone who could. When that didn't work out, they removed them. Now they leave it again to the Kshatriyas to take care of, but they're not. And so then they, because the innocent people will suffer, then they'll come in and do something. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanta Gaurakrinda ki.